Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until he takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person or persons, that will become obvious in just a moment, behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My name is Jason Shepherd, and I am very pleased to have my guests today, that's right, plural, from the BYU basketball team, Fusine Traore and Richie Saunders. Guys, thanks for taking a few minutes. I appreciate it.
No, we appreciate you guys. Thank
Super
you.
Excited to be here.
It's always good to see you guys. I want to start here. Obviously, you guys are competitors, and it's all about the competition and that kind of stuff. I want to know, now that we've got both of you in here, when you play one-on-one, who wins? Who has more victories under their belt?
It depends on all I know is if we're in the post, I got no chance. So I think it depends on where we are on the floor. Any words from you?
No, that's exactly right.
If it's down low, you own it, right?
I do own that.
I hope he does. He better.
That's what we like to hear. Okay, before we get into the craziness of this offseason, I do want to go back just a little bit to last season, and I already referenced this. So exciting. Everybody was so excited with what men's basketball did last year. And I know expectations in the program were different than they were outside, but and everyone wants to talk about exceeding expectations. But I know from your perspective, you guys knew that you had something pretty special. That's what I want to ask about. When did you know that you guys had something special going into that year? Is there a moment? Is there a game? I know a lot of people have talked about the off-season trip that you guys took. When did you realize this could be a pretty big year?
Well, I feel like since our last trip, you know, to Europe, you know, because we play a couple games, everybody actually thought we can do it together, you know. That's when we realized, we all need each other, you know. Nobody can do it by himself, you know. And I feel like that just helped us to just be bound, you know, as a team, you know. And we always play for each other. There was no, like, a selfish guy on our team, you know. Everybody was playing for each other.
Yeah, I think just on top of that is the, I think of Arizona State and that Vegas trip, right? Like, I mean, that's when we were finally, like, challenged. And I guess specifically the NC State game, right? When, if you remember, we were down and we could not get back. So again, the Foose got hurt, and so that was some unknowns with Ollie coming in, right? And I think that was a big time because, like, of course, we had some cool games before that in the non-conference, but that was a big one to, like, show each other and show ourselves as a team that, like, we can do this, like, we can actually do this. You know,
it's validation, right? Because you can go in and have all the confidence in the world, but if it doesn't work out like you thought it was, it can be a detriment and it can kind of crash your hopes a little bit. But to be able to feel good going in and then be able to execute and have that validation, how much, to your point, Richie, how much more did that help?
No, I think it especially told the world, like, a little bit more about us, right? like the year before, like, my freshman year was really hard. It was, like, such a big growth year. And at the beginning of last year, like, it still was in that growth mindset. But I think that was one of the times when it was like, look, like, we're going to close out games. And because we know how to now, right? Yeah. Like, we really do know. And also, like, we can, like, it took us, I think, until middle of the second half to finally break through in that NC State game of taking the lead. And that showed us in the world that, like we learned from the year before and we're ready to do it. So totally validation to your point.
Foose, does last year, because of all of the things that have happened since the end of the season, does it feel almost like a lifetime ago? Does it feel like it was a long time ago?
I actually feel like it was a long, long time ago. It is crazy, actually.
So when you look back on last year, what stands out to you is, as Richie mentioned, you know, you get hurt in the NC State game, you miss several weeks, you're able to get back in conference play, but what's your memory of last year? What do you take with you from looking back on last season?
Well, I was actually super proud of the team, you know, like when I got hurt, you know, everybody just step up, you know, like it was just amazing to just see like how if everybody play together, how we can actually like do something special, you know. And it was just like amazing to see like everybody help, you know, like it doesn't matter what game. Some people are gonna score, some people won't, but at the end of the day we always want the same exact thing, you know, which is winning, you know.
Yeah.
So it was just amazing, you know, like I was just sitting on the bench, just sitting with the team. Well, of course it was rough for me, you know, but I was happy for the team.
I know that the way the season ended, obviously the game that ended the season was not how you guys would have wanted, but I don't know that anybody can look at the season as a whole and call it anything other than successful. So with that in mind then, the season comes to an end, and I'm sure everybody's thinking, with the exception of guys that you knew, like graduating, like Spencer, you know, guys like that, that were going to be moving on, you're thinking to yourself, oh, it's time to just build off of this. And then Coach Pope leaves for Kentucky. Both of you, take me through what that time was like, or maybe that moment when you realized, oh, wait a minute, this is major.
It's hard. Like, it was, like, just totally exactly what you said. Like, we're like, let's go. Like, it was hard, right, talking about the Duquesne game, right? Like, that was one of the hardest times. And but, like, we're like, hey, let's do it. We got another year, like with mostly returning people. And when everything happened, like, the earth definitely was just shook, right? Like, it was completely, like, all of our, like, plans, everything was just, like, just went into a, like, a state of uncertainty. And I don't know what else you got to add, but, like, again, like, it was a really, it was a hard time.
No, it definitely was, you know, like it was depressing actually, you know, after we lost that game, you know, I couldn't actually almost isolate myself for 2 weeks, you know, it was just rough. And I said, well, we gotta just move on, you know, and get better, you know, and Mark Pope's thing happened, you know, but I just told myself, you know, just gotta trust the process, you know, like keep following your feeling, you know, and now you see.
Was it hard to do that? Because, you know, we talk about faith, and you gotta have faith that things will work out. But when it's time to actually put that into action and actually use that, was it hard with so much uncertainty?
It was actually super hard, because, like I said, well, we don't have anybody here, you know. We don't even know the coaching staff or anything, you know. So it was just, and the portal is supposed to close like 2 weeks, you know. I said, yeah. Well, we got to figure it out quick, you know, because I say I don't wanna. I love BYU, you know, but I say I wanna play with if we have a lot of teammates, you know, because we didn't have any, you know. So it was rough.
And Richie, you had a decision to make, and you decided. Really, you had two decisions to make. One, were you going to get in the portal, and if you did, then if you were going to stay or go. So take me through that initial decision to put your name in the portal. Was that a hard thing for you to do?
Yeah, no, it's extremely hard. Something I never thought would happen, you know. And then I guess moving on to the other one, like, of what in the world do we do? Like, right, like, I mean, I want to first say that, like it was, like having my wife Sierra, like, it was a time where we really just kind of tried really hard to block out everything, all the outside stuff, and just kind of let stuff settle. As we decided to go into the portal and see really, like, prayerfully, like, where does God need us, you know? And that was on the top of our mind in all of our conversations and everything. But yeah, I'm sure you got other follow-up questions, whatever, but yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting because I think a lot of people thought that with all the uncertainty and knowing how in demand you guys were, you know, they see pictures of you in Lexington coming off the you know, at the airport. Yeah. And I think everybody sort of prepared for the worst. Ultimately, though, you decide to come back to BYU. And I think it has something to do with what you just alluded to and what does God want from me. Take me through that decision and what went into that decision and why coming back was the right decision for you and your wife.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, like, to see the support that Cougar Nation, as we went in the portal, gave, like, was, that was something right there, you know, because you can be supportive when people are doing what you want, right? And but the love and support that we got, like that's something I want to make sure, like, that I show that I'm grateful for. But again, like, as we were getting down to the nitty-gritty, was making a decision and coming back, like, I mean, first, like, right with Coach Young and this, like, I guess it was really just him at that point, and the trust that I have in, Santiago, Brian Santiago and Tom Homo, like, I trust those guys. And, like, I told them, like, it was very clear of, like, look, like, we're going to be in the portal, you know, and we're going to hear everything. But, like, I'm excited to see what happens here. And, you know, just the feeling of, it really just came down to, like, where does God want us and where's our home going to be, right? Like, you leave, you go 15 years, you come back, where do we want our home to be? And I couldn't think about, like, being anywhere else, but, having Cougar Nation and being in the Marriott Center, coming back after career's done and stuff. But the amount of prayers and fasting and everything that went into that were just, it was, you know, a big faith builder for me and my wife. And as we can look back on it now, as it really does feel like years ago, I can really look at that with, like, gratitude for the faith that it gave me and the connection to God that it brought us.
Foose, how concerned were you? Not just for Richie, but there were other guys. Did you sort of keep your distance because it's everyone's own personal decision, or you were like, no, you need to get back here?
No, well, I try super hard, you know, because I know those are big decisions, you know. So I actually give him space, you know. And it was super hard for me, you know. Me and Dad, we always talk about it, you know. And I always told him, I say, hopefully we'll come back, you know. And when
I remember calling him and telling him that I was going to the portal, like that was hard. Like, just, no, like, that was hard.
It was just, it was super hard for me, you know, to see. I said, oh, no, you cannot lose him, you know.
So what did it mean to you when he said, I'm coming back?
Yeah.
Dallin, you know.
Oh, man, he called me and says, decided to stay, you know. Oh, man, it was around, what time, 6, 7?
Yeah.
You guys was already,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, we were. Well, like, I mean, he was.
Man, I was so happy.
Foose was one of the top three calls, you know.
You couldn't even say, oh, man, I was so happy about it. You know, I say, well, now we have a team, you know. And Dallin decided to come back the next morning, you know.
Yeah.
Say everything's just getting better, so.
Well, I know we're doing this a little bit out of order because the Coach Young hiring happened before everybody started coming back. So let's go back a little bit in reverse. Now that we know the decision for you guys to come back was made, let's go back to when Coach Young gets the job. And, you know, there was a little bit of time where you knew Coach Pope was gone and the search was on, but you still didn't have an official coach yet. You heard rumors and, you know, different names and out there. At that point, what did either of you know about Kevin Young at the time?
Yeah, I'll take it. Like, Danny Ainge is one of my heroes and somebody that, like, has been big for me and my wife, even throughout this. But I remember, like, talking through some stuff with him and him being like, well, there's no way they get him. But, I mean, best case scenario, you have Coach Kevin Young from the Suns. Just like, I don't think BYU can get him, but if they do, that's the best case scenario. And he just spoke really highly of him. So I mean, yeah. You got anything else?
No, did you know who Kevin Young was before he was hired?
I got no idea who he was. You know.
So what did you say? BYU's hiring Kevin Young. What was your first reaction?
Well, I hear a lot of good things about him since he was hired, you know, like everybody would say just good thing. And I said, well, I'm actually excited, you know, but I said, well, I got to talk to him, you know, to see what it's actually like, you know,
yeah,
how I'm going to be able to fit to his program, you know.
Well, and I think that's important because obviously he has an overall vision for this program, but he also has an overall vision for what he wants out of each player specifically. So what was that vision? What sold you on his vision of this program and your role in it? We'll start with you, Foose.
Well, it was when I talked to him, you know, he called me, you know, And I talked to him, he was just saying a lot of stuff, you know, like which actually can really help me a lot with my game and also help the team a lot, you know. And he started saying all those stuff. I said, man, I really like that guy, you know. See, I do want to play for him, you know.
Yeah.
So since that first conversation, I just feel like that's the right place for sure.
What about you, Richie?
Alex Caruso, that's the name that we talked about a lot of. I want to help you become a defender like Alex Caruso. And as we watched film about that, and like that kind of helped me see that vision of like look like he, of course, with all his he knows what he's doing. Like that's without the picture, but like how he can personally adapt who I am into a professional level, right? Like, I mean, that was just one of the things.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to me in the introductory press conference, you know, he talked about wanting to make BYU a place that is a pipeline to the NBA, that this is where guys that want to go to the NBA can come here and be developed so that when they get to the league, they're prepared. And I know there were a lot of outside people that said, BYU, really? You know, or just think maybe it's something that they felt he had to say. But now you see what he's doing. And the coaching staff he's bringing in that all have professional backgrounds and in development and things like that. The type of talent that's now coming in. Talk about potential lottery picks in upcoming drafts. How big has it been for you guys to hear that in the introductory press conference and then start to see some of these things fall into place?
I would say it's great, right? Like it shows that he's like Coach Young isn't – he's – what he says is like to the point. He's blunt and he's not dancing around any words. And it's cool to see that kind of stuff happen where we can get guys to where we can win. Cause that's got to be our number one priority.
Yeah.
And it seems like it is.
And it's been cool, you know. I feel like he's always trying to bring the best, you know. Especially, you know, like Coach Burgess is back. I was super excited.
That's his guy.
Everybody loves Burgess. We all love Burgess.
He's actually my guy, you know. So Coach called me, Coach said, well, we decided we're going to, you know, bring Coach Burgess back. But I was just, life is just getting better, you know. I've been waiting that for the last two years, you know.
Yeah.
And we finally got him. We've been working every day together, you know. He's actually been super fun, you know.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We've talked a lot of hoops, which, you know, for obvious reasons, we got a couple of hoopsters here. But on the other side, you guys are obviously close because you're teammates, but you're close in other ways in terms of basically being family. And we're going to get into that story when we come back. This is the Deep Blue Podcast on BYU Radio. Thanks again to everyone out there for listening to the Deep Blue Podcast. Make sure you leave us a rating and a review on the show. You should always check out other BYU Radio podcasts as well, like Big Stories. Cleon Wall dives into incredible and amazing tales from around the Big 12 and beyond, like Kansas offensive coordinator and former BYU coach Jeff Grimes. He and his wife Sherry decided early in their marriage that they wanted to adopt a child from another country. They detail their long journey to adopting Jada from Africa and how that girl changed their family dynamic. And then there is Wyoming women's rodeo coach J.C. Hupp, who lost her parents and niece in a terrible accident but continues to lead the cowgirls in the rodeo arena. There are so many more inspiring stories just like these two tales. So check out Big Stories on your favorite podcast platform and start listening today. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. My name is Jason Shepherd. So happy to have my guests today, Richie Saunders and Fusine Traore from BYU Men's Basketball. And I want to ask both of you, obviously you're known here for being athletes, and I want to know from both of you, what type of role did sports play for you growing up? Fus, let's start with you.
Maybe you heard of that story before. When I was growing up, I loved to play soccer, you know?
Yep.
But my dad is a basketball. He played basketball. My dad and my mom, you know. Since when I turned 13, my dad said, well, it's time to play basketball now, you know. But I used to love soccer. Now I do love basketball, you know. But I actually got forced into play basketball, you know. But I'm grateful today, though.
What about you, Richie? Was sports always a part of your youth?
Yeah, no, always from when we were little. like, I mean, my dad played in college. He played at UC Davis. And, I mean, when I was little, like, that's what we did is we played basketball. We played baseball. We played everything. And, yeah.
Was basketball always your favorite?
Yeah, I mean, okay, when I was similar to Fuji. I was, like, 11, and that's when I stopped playing baseball, and I feel like I really wanted to keep playing baseball, but my dad, I mean, now in hindsight, I think it was the right thing. But he kind of pushed me to just kind of focus more on basketball. And in turn, like, I just, I mean, like, all that I feel like all that I am now is because of that, right? Like, my parents who have, through sports and lots, like, other ways too, but mainly through sports, have taught me, like, work, just really how to work and all that kind of stuff.
Let's focus on your upbringings. You guys obviously come from two different backgrounds, you know, two different countries, two different parts of the world, but yet you've come here to BYU and have formed this bond. Foose, let's start with you. Talk about growing up. What was life like for you, your family, and just what was a young Fusine Traore like? Give us a glimpse inside.
That's a good question. I like that one.
That's actually a good question. Wow. Well, growing up, I'd say, like, especially my mom's side, you know, like, school was super important to her, you know. I would say she was a little strict, you know. Like, you got to get all your homework done. If you don't get it done, you're not going to go play, you know. So you don't have a lot of options, you know, like. So just actually, like, my mom actually taught me, you know, like, there is a lot of important thing, you know, like, especially school, you know, when it comes to work, you just got to always get it done first before you play, you know. And, yeah, just, I know, a couple little brother and one sister, you know, just been hanging out, you know. And actually used to play soccer with my friends, you know. Like, we all live next to each other, you know. We just go play soccer, you know. And we live with all your cousins, you know. Like, it was just fun, actually, growing up, you know. It was just super fun. But here it's just a little different, you know. Everybody's super far away from each other, you know.
Explain what growing up in Mali was like, because I'm assuming there's a lot of people, maybe most people, don't really know a whole lot about that area. So explain what it was like to grow up there.
It's definitely, well, when I was in Mali, I thought life was easy, you know. But since I got here, life is actually way better here, you know. Like, there is just a lot of stuff, you know. Mali actually behind, you know, like the lifestyle, you know. Like, there is a lot of places, you know, like, there is a lot of people, you know, with poverty, you know, like, it's just hard actually living in Mali. I didn't know that until I moved here, you know.
Because it's all you knew when you're there.
That was all I knew. Right? That was just normal, yeah. You know, I just think so. That was the best life, you know. Since I moved here, it's just, my life is just different. It's way better here, you know, like, sometimes I feel like Mali will never catch up USA, you know. It's just, there is no just any possibility, you know. So I'm just grateful I'm here, you know. I'm super grateful, actually.
So for you, Richie, then, a little bit different circumstances, being able to grow up here in the United States and in the state of Utah. What was life like in your family growing up?
Yeah, definitely different, right? You know, I mean, with, like, my parents, like, kind of said, like, they taught me how to work. I mean, financially, like, in a situation growing up where, like, I had to learn how to provide for kind of my sports, and where I was mowing lawns several times a week, where I was always trying to figure out how to kind of, like, my parents were gave me so much in life, right? And they taught me so much, and along with that, like, they gave me foundations to where, like, I would have to pay for most of my basketball. I'd have to pay for a lot of different stuff. And I'm super grateful for that now, right? Like, as I've had to, it really taught me how to, again, how to work and how to kind of navigate through that. But it's been cool to, I have four sisters, and they were each my mom, my mother, and somewhere or not, right? Like, they, I mean, they took care of me and, taught me a lot, and I'm super grateful for my family and where I grew up and all that. But
Well, your path to where you are today is a lot more traditional than what people know in terms of going to high school and then you go to college. I mean, it's people kind of understand that. My question, Foose, for you is somebody that grows up in Mali, how do you end up playing basketball in Utah?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is, it's all happened because of Mike Clayton, you know. Actually, I was one afternoon, you know, my national team called coach me, you know. He said, oh, there is an American guy. Can I come just watch some people play? He said, you want to come play? I said, oh, yeah, why not, you know? So I just went play after the game. Mike came and talked to me, said, you want to help me come here? So that's how I got here.
Was that shocking to you? Was it a surprise? Had you even thought of being able to come to the United States or go anywhere?
I definitely didn't think I would come in here, you know, but I got a couple of, I was actually working on some paper to go to Spain or France, you know. And when the U.S. opportunity came, I said, oh, that's actually big time. You know, I was actually super excited and super grateful.
So from the time, by the time you got to Utah, how long before you guys had actually met for the first time?
Weeks, right?
Mm, I mean, yeah, maybe a couple of weeks.
Do you remember the first meeting?
Yeah, I remember. So Foose didn't speak any English, right? And at this point, we were in Riverton still for... yeah, but I remember he was over at our house, and I remember we were giving him ice cream. And Foose is, especially at that time, not so much anymore, but especially at that time, he was really good at just saying yes to everything, you know? And so, I mean, like, I just, okay, first off, like, I don't know if he wanted ice cream. I don't know if he wanted whatever on top of it, but we just kept asking him. He was always saying yes. But I just remember just the look of just like, what am I doing? Like, you know, like, he didn't speak the language. He's in this random house. Like,
why do they keep feeding me all this ice cream?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's my first thought. I think that's what it is.
Do you remember that, Foose?
I actually do remember that.
Did you like the ice cream?
No, it was nice. Well, I couldn't speak English.
So you did say, okay, yes was the right answer. Okay.
You know, it was actually a couple of rough when I first got here, you know. I was actually ready to quit, you know. I just couldn't handle it.
Just the homesickness and wanting to be back? Familiarity?
Homesickness. Everything was different. The language, I couldn't talk to anybody. You know, it was actually a rough time, you know.
You gotta make sure to talk about the snow because you got to picture this. Like, Molly was probably like 115 in the middle of the night. And he came in January, you know. And so
it was snowing everywhere, you know. Like, couldn't even go out, you know. Just stand outside. It was just, I couldn't do it.
It's different.
Have you gotten used to the snow at all?
Nope. But I got better, you know.
Once he's done playing basketball, he'll start skiing or something. And then
like become a snowboarder, maybe? Have you ever skied?
Nah.
I don't know if you're
supposed to.
I was going to say.
You know, I'm lying.
we don't need to get anybody into trouble here.
Oh, no. We know a lot. Hopefully one day.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so eventually, you guys meet, but eventually you also end up playing together at Wasatch Academy. So how did that happen? How did that connection get made?
Yeah, I mean, so my junior year of high school, like in that spring, I was recruited to play there and kind of going back and forth on, like, really had no intentions of leaving Riverton, but seeing this as a cool opportunity. It was just me and my parents. I'm the youngest, and we decided to move there for 2 years. And in that process, as my parents were trying to figure out where to go, we ended up that the family that Foose was with for the few months is where I ended up living with them. They're mutual friends, and so I ended up we ended up sharing a room for a few months, and I just slept on an air mattress while he was on his bougie nice bed. But that was funny, right? Because again, he didn't speak much English, and but it was a cool thing that for some reason, like as we were talking, like I just felt like I knew what he was saying. Like I felt like I could understand him. Sometimes I would try to speak to him in Spanish, but in a French accent to see if he could understand. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, because how many languages again, Foose, do you speak?
Three.
Okay, so English, French,
and Bambara.
Okay, there you go. So my question for you, since you guys, you know, were roommates for a while, who's were you both clean? Like who was the better roommate? Who was the bad roommate? I think that's what
I'm
really
I'm only gonna throw one piece of dirt out, and that's the bathroom time, right? Like the shower time. But there'd be times when I'd be so frustrated because the freaking, like, I know the shower would be going for 45 minutes, and I'd be like, what in the world is going on? But I hear him talking to his family in the shower, you know what I'm saying? But
no, it was just, you know, and Molly, we don't have no shower.
Yeah, then I gotta humble myself and be like, he's gotta make up.
We got like a bucket, you know, that's what I used to shower in, and I came here, everything was just nice.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes I just stand in the like hot shower for just while, you know, just stand there, you know.
When you look back on those times, because obviously you're playing together now at BYU, but looking back playing at Wasatch Academy, how do you remember those times?
No, it was actually cool. It was super rough for me, you know, like for the couple. I mean, but I think Uruchi helped me a lot, you know, because whenever he go to work out, he usually call me and I say, let's go, you know. He helped me show me like how really hard work look like, you know. So that's when I say, well, it's time to step up, you know, like he's always like since in high school, you know, he's always be the hardest working ever guy ever, you know. So, well, I'm going to try to work as hard as him, you know.
Was it always the plan for both of you to come to BYU, or is that kind of the way it worked out? How did that play out that you both ended up here?
I mean, I remember going back and forth with my recruitment and stuff. Like when I committed, I was I planned on serving a mission, right? So I served a mission, and then I just remember getting the call from you of saying like you were committing, and I was like so happy, right? Because I mean, yeah, you can talk more about that, but
no, yeah, I know Ruchi was coming to BYU, but Vesave was always telling me to come to BYU. I actually got no idea, you know. Because at that point, I couldn't speak any English.
Yeah, like,
you know?
my family, apparently, like, they would always try to get him to come to BYU. And, of course, he'd always be saying, yeah, yeah, yeah. but learned later that he didn't understand
that. I actually
got
no idea what they were saying, you know. But I think so, yeah, when, you know, Mark Pope and Coach Burgess were recruiting me, you know, I actually feel super close because they offered me the end of my sophomore year, you know. And I remember Burgess always sent clips to my high school assistant coach, you know, so we can be working on it, you know, like I feel like since I was a junior, they was helping me like develop my game, you know. Yeah. And I just feel connected to them, you know. I say, well, I think so that's the right place, you know.
Both of you are probably going to look at this in similar ways, but from different perspectives. So obviously you guys, you know, were under the same roof, you know. Richie's family became your family, and then you guys essentially became brothers, and you guys were just super close. What did that relationship mean to you, and what does it still mean to you to this day? Richie, let's start with you.
I mean, this is my little brother. Like, it's funny how I went on a mission, and he became going to be a senior. I'll be a junior. So now he's always been saying that. But no, like, this is my little brother, you know, and but I look up to him, and it taught me so much for those years of, like, I don't have a brother, you know, I just got sisters, and, to have to learn how to, communicate, I mean, with language or not, but how to kind of live life and, with somebody else. And it was such a cool learning opportunity growing up, or for the like high school years. And you know, it's been really cool to be able to go and see his family and learn more about, like, his culture, his home country, and religion. And it's been cool to really build off of each other's religion. And, like, he was a very big example of for me in high school of being true to, like, God and to your faith. And, yeah, I mean, I guess it was learning. There was times when we would fight and we would just not talk to each other because we couldn't stand each other, but definitely, like, super, I look back on that portion of our lives, like, it's a really cool thing.
No, it was actually cool, like you said, you know, sometimes we're gonna fight everything, you know, but, like, I really know he cared a lot about me, you know, because it showed me a lot of time, you know, even when I did not like to speak at all, you know, I just watched all my movie and and friends, talk to my family all the time, you know. My friends, you know, and Bambara, you know, but he decided, say, well, and he decided, he always sit me, you know, and just say, let's just talk, you know. At the beginning, I said, man, that boy is knowing, man, you know. But actually, like 3-4 months, I just see my, like, my English was just getting better, you know. I said, man, he's actually helping him a lot, you know. So I feel like that really helped me a lot, you know, to be able to understand, like, a lot of people, especially the coaches, you know, because of him, you know, he make me talk, like, learning new stuff every day, you know. And, yeah, and like you said, you know, we went to Mali together a couple of times, you know. I'm just super grateful whenever he go there, you know, like, I know we doesn't speak the same language, like, you know, but the way he enter with the kid, you know, like, sometimes I feel like he's more Malian than me. I feel like he love Mali more than me, you know. Now, actually, yeah, whenever we go there, you know, like, he's 100% in, you know, like, just trying to make people feel happy, you know, like, be there for them, you know, play with the kids, you know. And I'm grateful for him. He's my, well, he used to be my big brother, but now he's my little brother.
For a lot of the reasons that we've covered already, it would be very, very easy for you two to focus on what makes you different, different backgrounds, you know, growing up different ways. But yet, even with different religions and different backgrounds, it feels like you guys have found what makes you the same more than what makes you different. Can you guys talk a little bit about that and why that has helped you guys strengthen the bond?
I mean, maybe the first thought that I have is just with that, like, the religious differences, right, is, like, I realized how, like, we both are dedicated to our faith. And you know, like, I can remember one time I was coming home from seminary and all the doors were locked and stuff, and so I was frustrated with nobody was answering the door. I knew he was home, and so just frustrated. I know that in the room that we shared, if you hit the window and slid it over, it would open from the outside. Mm-hmm. And so I remember going down and being really upset of because he wasn't coming to the door. I get there, I step inside, and he's praying, and I'm like, oh my god, like, it's, I'm like instantly humbled, right? Like, like, being able to see, I think, each other in the way that we view God is a big, has, at least for me, has been a big thing.
Yeah, and there is a lot, that's one of the things I decided to come to BYU, you know, if you feel like it's the same exact rules, you know. And that's why there is a lot of colleges, you know, it's going to be hard, definitely hard to follow God rules, you know, but I feel like BYU is just the best place for it, you know. Like, everything about it here, you know, even, I know I'm only with different, you know, different religion, but everybody treat me the same, you know, with respect, you know, like, I'm just grateful I'm here, you know.
You guys have been able to create actually a foundation in Africa. Tell everybody what that is and how that came to be.
You got it.
Okay. well, I mean, when I got back from my mission, like, we decided, like, we're put our heads together of, like, how in the world can we help Mali? How can we help his country? And if one of the ways we discussed is, like, by trying to figure out how to impact the youth and creating opportunities for them. And
it's just, you know, like, that's Mali is just sometimes the government, they just frustrate me a lot, you know. Even sometimes talking about it makes just me mad, you know, like, they're just not willing to help, you know. Because everything in Mali is about money, you know. The more you give, like, government, they don't actually care about the Malian people, you know. They just care about themselves, you know. So they've just been slowing down everything, you know. Like, I said, man, we're trying to do this for you guys, for the Mali, for the, like, say, why you guys don't not willing to help, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah, in reference, like, so, I mean, we've been able to put on different camps for the youth with a big goal of creating a sports complex, and as we've gone over and met with like, government dignitaries, like, it's been really cool and big learning opportunity, and we're just still in the process of securing the rights to build this. That's kind of, yeah, where we're at. I mean, with that overarching big goal, but it's been cool to, through our mutual love of basketball, to put on these camps and to, I mean, again, like, the whole opportunity is, Afus has like, because of who he is and who he's become with basketball and with everything else, right? Like, his goal is how can he help his country? And it's like, how in the world can we create more people like that that can leave their country and give back so much? Yeah, I mean, that's, again, like, one of the big goals. But
yeah,
if people would like to help out, are there ways that they can help out with the foundation or get more information about it?
As of right now, as we're kind of in a pause with this big project, there's not, but I mean, keep looking on our social medias and stuff for updates with that.
Great. All right, let's bring it back to basketball for one final question for each of you. Senior year for you, Foose. Richie, you mentioned you're a couple years behind Foose in school because of the mission. So I want to ask, what do you want out of this year, both on and off the court? Foose, let's start with you.
On and off the court. Well, like, I'm just hoping we're going to, you know, like, I know this year going to be actually a good year, you know. So I'm hoping, you know, I know we got a lot of good pieces, you know. I'm just hoping how we're going to figure it out how to use, you know, how we can all play together, you know, as a team, you know, like, because at the end of the day, we only got one goal, which is winning, you know. Like, we can have a lot of pieces, but if we cannot figure out how to play together, you know, yeah, it's going to be hard for us, you know, and just be able to create, like, a family, you know, like, brotherhood, you know, to know, like, no matter what, you know, there is someone behind you who will always be there for you, you know. That's what I'm hoping for, you know. Definitely go win all.
That's what we like. Yeah. Richie, what about for you? What do you want out of this year?
Biggest thing is to win. Like, I want us to win and win in March Madness and to really show the world, like, what a program and spot this is here at BYU. And I want to learn. Like, I want to learn and I want to improve my defense to become an elite defender. Like, that's one of my big things for this year. And put it over everything. Like, we can be whatever, but the biggest thing is, like, I want us to win and to learn how to win and to really have fun and to enjoy doing that.
Well, you guys are very easy to cheer for on the court and just as easy to cheer for as human beings off the court. You guys were amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. I really appreciate you guys doing this today.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
All right. Thanks once again to my guests, Richie Saunders and Fusene Traore. My name is Jason Shepard. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.